The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. Watching us on the PCTV Select app and on cable channel 1301 Access Pittsfield. I'm Sean Sayre here. Good morning and welcome to the show. It's Friday, May 22nd, the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. I hope everybody is gearing up for that. And if you're watching this, this is a special program that will also air on Monday, the 25th, on Memorial Day itself. And I have a great guest here this morning. I have Dr. Eric Guralnick. He is the Secretary of the Executive Office of Veterans Services for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He's joining me by Zoom this morning, and we're going to have a great discussion about what the State Department does and his background and a lot of things centering around veterans, veteran services, and supporting those who have served our country so well. So I'm looking forward to that conversation with Dr. Guralnick. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today and for at least the first part of the weekend coming up. Here it goes.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Areas of frost. Much cooler with lows in the mid-30s. Northeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 60s. Northeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy. Lows in the mid-40s. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. And I understand we will have some rain over the weekend and a little bit here and there, but not a washout. I don't think we're going to be in that category over the weekend. We were thinking it might have been, but right now it's looking better than it was. So everybody looking forward to having a great weekend and celebrating. And so joining me now by Zoom, Dr. Eric Guralnick. He is the Secretary of the Executive Office of Veteran Services, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Good morning, Mr. Secretary. How are you today? And thanks for joining me.
Great, Sean. How are you?
Very well, thanks. And thanks for joining us on this early of a morning. I don't know if you get a chance to do a lot of early morning engagements, but it's a good thing to have you come in and not have to drive the turnpike this early and get here for the studio. So glad you could join us by Zoom.
Oh, I made it in half the time. It was amazing. although I had to cut out my morning workout, so we'll have to get in later, Sean.
All right. Well, we'll make sure you get that for sure. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You were appointed by the governor in January, sworn in February of this year. Give us a little bit on your background and what brought you to this position and sort of what you bring to the table.
Sure. So I'm a Navy veteran. I went to the United States Naval Academy. My mom is from Lowell. My dad's from Winthrop. I grew up actually in Los Angeles. They moved to California and then came back and have lived in Massachusetts since 2010. You know, when I was in the Navy, was a ship driver, was a surface warfare officer, had several deployments and was exposed to medicine. And through those deployments, I found a passion for medicine and then took classes at night and the weekends and went to med school. And have been practicing emergency medicine physician through residency and through starting at Brigham in 2010. And, you know, I've never forgotten my roots and always have been connected with the military and veterans, either setting up groups at the Harvard Medical School or the School of Public Health to bring together our tribe for social events, for mentorship opportunities, and have really focused on research in the area of improving care on the battlefield and improving care for veterans in a variety of domains. So this was a great opportunity for me to step up and step in and serve in another way. And I'm really excited about this next step in my journey to serve our country and serve our state and serve our community.
Now, it's interesting, the background both in the Naval Academy and in the Armed Forces, and then coming to medicine later. I think that's an interesting background that brings both of those things to bear in this particular job. And so talk about the kinds of things that the Secretary of Veterans Services here for the Commonwealth, what kinds of things does this particular department do? Tell for people that are not familiar with what goes on.
Sure. Great question, Sean. So what are we? What is the Executive Office of Veterans Services? Well, it's a secretariat or a cabinet level position established just about 3 years ago with under Governor Healey's leadership and teaming with the legislature, who recognized we really needed this in the Commonwealth. We were facing the impact of COVID and really several preventable deaths that were at Holyoke, primarily in Chelsea, and thinking about how we need to turn the ship around. And so that was a real effort to establish the secretariat. And what does that mean? So really it was a consolidation of various pockets of veteran services across our state government. The team now is about 837 strong. It's about a $205 million annual budget. And what does the team do? There are about 17 different programs. The biggest program is, of course, running those veterans' homes, formerly called soldiers' homes, mm-hmm. one in Holyoke and Chelsea, and ensuring they meet the highest quality and safety standards to take care of our residents. The second big bucket of work is benefits, ensuring and supporting individuals, veterans who qualify for state or federal benefits to help them through the application process, to help them manage that work. And then the third bucket is all of our wraparound services. We have programs embedded here, a SAVE program, which is around navigators, individuals who can help veterans navigate various services that are available for them throughout the state, from social services, from shelter, meaning short-term or long-term housing, food pantries and food availability to navigate food insecurity, mental health counseling, suicide prevention, and others. We do that work with the SAVE team. We do that work partnering with 20 nonprofits that we work with, who are really embedded within communities and know the local networks and work with us on all those wraparound services. In addition, other programs include SERVE, which is a program that's really focused on justice-involved veterans. So individuals that are involved in the court system, they've either been imprisoned or they're navigating issues like substance use and others. And the individual counselors that we have real lived experience. So they're people that have been imprisoned, have navigated these issues, and can really be peer-to-peer counselors to help them with that. So those are examples. One more to highlight of all those programs is, of course, veteran transitions. So really helping veterans find meaningful careers in the civilian space. So that's sort of a general bucket of all the different programs that we support here.
That's quite a bit. And I'd like to delve into each one of those if we can to talk specifically about that. And let's go into the veterans' homes, formerly known as the soldiers' homes. And the one in Holyoke, obviously, newly rebuilt, right? Brand new construction. Give us a timeline of sort of what's happened with that particular facility, because obviously there were people hurt around the time of COVID. That was a very difficult time. And it sounds like that was somewhat of the impetus for creating this office and to look forward to being able to solve for some of those issues. Tell us more about what the Veterans Home actually does provide for veterans in our area and what critical services they receive there.
Sure. So Veterans Home, one focus on Holyoke because we're focused on Western Mass. But of course, there's another here in Chelsea. Both of those structures were older structures. They've been around for quite some time. And this is part of a national program, by the way. I'm not sure if every state has homes, but most do. And they're really a joint program between states and the federal government to ensure that there are residencies for veterans so those individuals can receive care. And there's various levels of care that they receive simply from day-to-day care with oral medications, wound care, et cetera, to some more complex care. And of course, in coordination with local healthcare systems, obviously patients that are critically ill or require hospitalization or working with them closely. So, at both homes, they each have a varied population. But in Holyoke in particular, to your point, again, there was during COVID, there were some decisions really that were made in retrospect, of course, at the beginning of COVID. Again, I'm an emergency medicine physician. I think we were all challenged to do our best and figure out what was going on. But there were some decisions made that in retrospect, really we think, compromised care. And in retrospect, identified some preventable deaths, particularly around cohorting patients in rooms. And so moving forward in the short term, there was a real effort to rebuild trust and confidence and culture within that community, within that center, working with clinicians, physicians, nurse practitioners, nurses, care coordinators, and others. To really rebuild trust and rethink safety, quality, and culture. And so the effort has been around ensuring that we meet and exceed all the credentialing requirements that the VA has for us, for those homes, in addition to Department of Public Health and CMS, in addition to standardizing and moving from paper to an electronic healthcare record, to putting patients or residents in their own rooms, if feasible, and of course the new facility are all private rooms. Thinking through that piece, and then the design of the facility is really quite remarkable. And again, the design now is really built on some of those lessons learned that we've had, not only from the experience in Holyoke, but also when we built a new building in Chelsea and translating many of those lessons learned from that experience.
About how many veterans do you serve with those two homes?
Yeah, so total is around 300 or so.
Okay.
Currently, and so we're going to be able to scale that up when Holyoke opens to have more capacity. So we're really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. And do the services for these homes also help with the provision for, we hear a lot about veterans facing homelessness and being unhoused and the challenges, the very specific challenges that veterans face. Are these some of the services that go toward helping that?
Well, so the homes are really a separate program than combating homelessness. There's been a real push and effort by Governor Healey and my predecessor, Jonathan Santiago, who was the first secretary of the Executive Office of Veterans Services, also an emergency physician. Mm. And the effort was really focused on a goal of zero homeless veterans in the state of in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And that effort really started with, building, relationships with these trust brokers, with these nonprofits throughout the state. And identifying those that can provide housing resources. And this work has been ongoing for quite some time, but really was a consolidation of those services so we can complement each other, have more of an enterprise strategy. And really, the issue here is that veterans, out of the homeless population, veterans represent about 8% of the homeless population of the Commonwealth.
It's a pretty significant number, right?
Pretty significant. Overall, veterans represent less than 2% of the population in the state. So it's disproportionate. Mm. There's an annual survey that's done through the federal government that looks at, they take one night and they do a survey of homeless individuals throughout each of the states. And last January, we had 550 individuals who were homeless that identified as veterans. Now, we know that's an underestimate, but it gives you a ballpark figure to shoot for. And so there's been a real effort to identify and work with these nonprofits and other organizations to provide both long-term and short-term shelter for individuals. And that gives them an opportunity to really get something under their feet and then build on that and find meaningful jobs, careers, and establish a home for them or their families together.
Yeah, it sounds like the building blocks are the key to it, right? Is to start and then build from there. And the level of trust also seems to be something I'm hearing from you that's really important to back up.
I mean, the trust is essential. Mm. There are, you know, so many challenges out there, and, you know, veterans embedded, you know, in communities across the Commonwealth. It's really about that, you know, white glove concierge type service where it's really peer to peers, speaking with each other, establishing that level of trust and working through any deep seated issues to help them.
Dr. Eric Gorelnick is the Secretary of the Executive Office of Veterans Services for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He's my guest here this morning on Morning Drive on this Memorial Day weekend. This is 89.7 WTBR-FM's Morning Drive. Let's delve into another area of what the Secretariat performs for the Commonwealth, as you mentioned, that pathway to benefits for veterans, I know, which is very important, and it seems like sometimes it must be very difficult to navigate for the ordinary person, knowing what veterans benefits are available, how to receive them, what documentation is needed. I hear a lot of things like that are very complex. What are some of the services that your office can help provide throughout the state for our veterans?
Well, the one big takeaway here is making sure if anybody's interested, go to mass.gov/vets, and you can learn about all these services and get connected with our team. Speaking of benefits, you know, one of the magical things about the Commonwealth and Veteran Services is there are Veteran Service Officers, and these Veteran Service Officers, speaking about trust and community, are embedded within communities. They are in each of the 351 cities or towns in the state. There are about 270 of them, so some of them cross cover and have multiple cities or towns that they take care of. They're actually hired and employed by the cities or towns, and we work closely with them. And they're really the front door for veterans to understand their benefits that are available to them. Again, either state, federal, or any of these wraparound services or nonprofits within the community. And so that's one unique program. Mm-hmm. So I'd encourage, veterans who are hearing this, again, go online, take a look at your city's website, find that VSO, and have a cup of coffee with them and understand what's available to you and how we can help and support you in a variety of different services and build that community.
So for Pittsfield, that's a local person that's here in the city and serving Berkshire County, right? Or is that... each individual city or town? How does that usually, is it region wide?
So it depends. Mm-hmm. So in your case, there's veteran service officers that cover multiple towns, okay, right, in Western Mass for the most part. So we can, you know, look up the names of each individual that covers each town, but simply going to your town or city's website and then taking a look, and you can identify that individual, mm-hmm, to reach out to. But when we talk about benefits and state benefits, again, another really unique and interesting and helpful program for veterans here in the state is Chapter 115 benefits. Okay. So those benefits are funded by the state. They help fund food, shelter, clothing, fuel, medical care, whatever it may be. And veterans who live below the poverty line are eligible for that, and again, can work with their VSO to identify that. And it's not just providing those benefits, but it's really providing consultation help to beyond funding, mm-hmm, is sort of to help them with, you know, coming back into society while helping with any needs that they particularly have. There's another benefit. It's the disabled veteran annuities. This again was passed with the HERO Act, which is really the most comprehensive Veterans Act for quite some time here in the state. And that's $2,500 a year. That's for individuals who have 100% disability as established by the VA, the federal VA, in addition to surviving spouses. So that's second benefit. And then there's a veteran bonus that comes from the state treasury each year for individuals who are eligible. So those are, you know, three state benefits. The other financial benefit is the VA and working with the VA to establish, to apply and understand if you're eligible for disability funding that comes directly from the federal government. Hmm.
And so these benefits, obviously very important for veterans to know. And also, it sounds to me like it would be important for their families and their loved ones to know as well. And I wonder how, and you know, hopefully a program like this locally that people are listening to, they may not realize that some of those benefits are there for them to reach out and get. Certainly going to your local veterans office here in Pittsfield or in other areas of Berkshire County or in Western Mass would be your first step, right, toward finding that out. But how many veterans do you feel like maybe are missing out on some of this because they're not aware of it or they haven't been informed of, or maybe, you know, things get lost and don't realize that those things are available to them?
It's a great question. How many people are we missing out? And, you know, my gut tells me there's a fair amount. You know, we've charged the team with just that question, Sean, and we're working through how do we capture that? So that's something that I think we're going to try to tackle over the course of the next 90 days. We're working on building a strategic plan and identifying what do we want to measure, right? What are the clear metrics that we think can drive impact? We measure a lot of things right now, and really focusing and prioritizing on the things that are most relevant and impactful for veterans. And that's the next step, to identify those key performance indicators and drive that forward to serve our veterans best.
You're listening to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM's Pittsfield Community Radio. Dr. Eric Gorelnick is my guest this morning, joining us from the eastern part of the state by Zoom. He is the Secretary of Executive Office of Veterans Services for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Secretary Gorelnick, how many veterans do we have in Massachusetts? What's our... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So we have a total of about 274,000 veterans here in Massachusetts. That's from a report from 2023. Mm-hmm. That's a, you know, from 2017, that's down from about 380,000. What we see is that our veteran population is getting older, right? Greater than 50% over 65. We also see right now there is less than 10% are women veterans, about 8%. But we see that growing over time based on projections that that's going to reach in the next 20 or so years. I think the estimate said like by 2058, we'd see that rise up to about 15%. So it's important to navigate these changes. And of course, the challenges with housing costs, what we see is a movement to more rural areas. So Western Mass, for example, as opposed to the larger metropolitan areas. And so that brings with it a new level of challenges and opportunity about how we can serve our veterans that are a little bit further out from these metropolitan cities that are hubs with more access to services, particularly healthcare, transportation, and others. And so that's, again, part of the strategy to learn and understand and get out there to Western Mass and hear from the folks on the ground to help support them.
Yeah, maybe talk about the differences, the challenges for different demographics. And I'm thinking not only urban suburban, rural, and the access to services, which, of course, is always a challenge in Western Massachusetts, is that we are further away in a lot of ways from the center of population and the ease of getting, although anyone who's tried to travel on Route 93, I would probably challenge me to say that it's easy to get anywhere. Maybe it's easier to get places here in Western Mass. But also generationally, you mentioned I think you said 283 something. Did I get that number right? 1,000 veterans in the state of Massachusetts. How many of them, you said that they're aging, and I would imagine a good number of them are Vietnam era veterans, but then you're also, I'm sure, working with younger generation veterans as well, from the Iraq and Afghanistan area, right up to today. And I would imagine they have different needs and different requirements.
It's really interesting. It's a great observation, Sean. So, traveling through the state, and I spent a couple days in Western Mass, Pittsfield, Greater Barrington, North Adams, and some of the sites there through the Berkshires. And it was really interesting. This there's a bit of a chasm, right, between Vietnam veteran era and prior to individuals who are veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan in the last 25 years of war. And there's the model of organizations and having these social opportunities that a lot of these large organizations have been based on, right? Whether American Legion or VFW, and but the challenge that they're all expressing is really engaging that younger generation, Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And what I hear from the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans is, we've got families, we've got jobs during the, we can't go during the day or, go, to the local legion. We're focused on when we can, we really need that support, whether again, it's food pantries, navigating housing instability, social services, mental health counseling. There's, a real movement towards how we can support those individuals. And that's one of the challenges that I think we're trying to navigate, understand, and work on, which is how do we bring these communities together a bit and bridge that chasm, because it's so important for that intergenerational connection.
Yeah, I think there definitely is a difference, really, in terms of how they interact. And I hear your point about, the folks from the World War II era, Korea, and earlier, and they did gather in spaces like American Legions and VFWs, and there was a much more of a social connection. And I wonder if the newer generations of veterans are benefiting from that, or if they're just finding their own pathways, or do they need something more? Is society helping to support them in the ways that they need?
Yeah, I mean, the generation of Vietnam veterans, there is, still a lot of really tough memories about how they were treated when they came back. And that is a legacy that endures. An interesting legacy there, too, is that there really wasn't the encouragement or openness of speaking about mental health that there is today for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. I mean, of course, there is still, unfortunately, stigma in society around this, but it's much more open, and much of that goes back to some of the efforts of the Army, in the 2007 or 2008, where they put this at the forefront. And there are no great answers here, but there's a lot of great work on working through these issues.
You have U.S. Navy experience as well, being a veteran yourself. How do you feel that, your interaction coming out of the military and coming into civil society and seeing some of the folks that you served with as well? How do you feel that your generation of services has come back and being provided for by society? Do you feel welcomed back in a way that maybe the Vietnam veterans did not get the benefit of?
Absolutely. You know, people have been incredibly supportive of my career as a naval officer and the work I've done. I think, you know, it's interesting. We talk about transitions, and, you know, I tell people, look, you know, you see a physician, you see Harvard, you see all this experience, but quite frankly, I've got like a 95% failure rate. And it's really important to understand. Well, go ahead.
How do you figure 95% failure rate?
Maybe it's 90%. An interesting pathway is, I'll give you an example. When I was going through, when I was going through and applying to medical schools, I was in Illinois. I met with several deans of admission at medical schools. And the feedback that I had was, your GPA at the Naval Academy was not great. And or comparatively, right? I'm going against 4.0 students. And even though you did great at all your post-baccalaureate courses, which I did at Northwestern and Lake County Community College at night and the weekends, it was an unfair sort of disadvantage that I had, competing against those individuals. So I had an opportunity that was to go to med school in Israel. I went to med school in Israel because one of my friends had told me about it and said, you know, go for it. And so I did. Hmm. And actually that opened up a whole new world for me and a great experience. Got to live overseas, got to connect and learn about history in the Middle East region. That was two steps back, one step back, two steps forward, and eventually, moving forward and taking advantage of other opportunities and emergency medicine residency and practicing here in Boston. So, it's one example where, I again, take two steps back or one step back, two steps forward kind of thing.
What I'm hearing is a story of persistence and adaptation. And that I think is a very good model to hear. And I think that is what folks who serve in our military and our armed forces take to heart every day. The story doesn't change when they come out of the armed forces and the military service and come back to society. And that's the kind of thing that that this office, it sounds like, is working to help. We need to take our top of the hour break, Secretary Guralnick, and we will return right after this with our conversation. Lots more to ask you about here on this Memorial Day weekend. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Santrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you could show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support this station to keep it on the air. And every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
When emergencies happen, every second counts. That's why the City of Pittsfield has launched a new Emergency Alert mass notification system designed to keep you informed when it matters most. This free service delivers real-time updates about severe weather and storm warnings, public safety alerts, and urgent city updates. Whether you're at home, at work, or on the go, timely information can help you make safe, informed decisions. To sign up for alerts, visit the city's website at pittsfieldma.gov.
Hey, water lovers, this is Leslie Gabriel, your water ambassador, host of And So It Flows. Our water music and water culture brings water outside the cup. Moisten your ears every Tuesday at 2 p.m. here at WTBR 89.7 FM. Love your water.
In the abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you. It's Friday, May 22nd. This program will also be played again on Memorial Day, the 25th of May. So if you're watching us then, welcome and glad you could join us. The guests for the show this morning, Dr. Eric Gorelnick. He is the Secretary of the Executive Office of Veterans Services for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And we're honored to have him here for the conversation this morning, all about veterans, veteran services, as we celebrate and remember the people that gave their lives and sacrificed for us in the defense of our country. And that's what Memorial Day is about. First, let's get to our weather forecast one more time, and we'll get back to our conversation with Secretary Gorelnick right after this.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Areas of frost. Much cooler with lows in the mid-30s. Northeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 60s. Northeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy. Lows in the mid-40s. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, and for those of you interested in the weather for Memorial Day weekend, it's some rain, but not a washout. Some nice sunny times and some occasional showers. We're going to get a kind of a mix of everything this weekend, so don't cancel your plans just yet. It'll be nice, and everyone will have a chance to enjoy and be around people. I will remind people that if you're watching this on Monday morning, the Memorial Day parade and services will kick off at the corner of Fenn and North Street at 9 a.m. They will march to the Memorial Park down on South Street, where there'll be a service there, and that will be covered live by Pittsfield Community TV. So you can tune into channel 1303 for that, or just pick out the PCTV Select app and you can watch it there. I believe it'll also be on Facebook. So check that out when you can. 9 o'clock on Monday. Coming back to our interview with Secretary Dr. Eric Gorelnick. Again, thanks, Secretary Gorelnick, for joining us here this morning. Glad you could be here.
Oh, thanks so much, Sean. Can we talk about Military Appreciation Day, which
Absolutely.
Was yesterday here
yes.
in the Commonwealth?
That would be great.
I just want to make sure we don't miss it. So this was the second annual Military Appreciation Day, which was a great event. It's housed and set up in the chamber, the House chamber at the state capitol, which is just an extraordinary room or forum for this. And we had asked legislators throughout the Commonwealth to identify veterans or active duty military, or family members that had supported veterans that would be identified as champions in their community, and they could come to the State House and be honored. And so we had 138 that were honored yesterday. I just want to read a couple names, and these are names from Western Mass, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So Delfo Barabani from Chicopee, Paul Barabani from Chicopee, Thomas Belton from Springfield, Frederick R. Benda Jr. from Westfield, Paul Chirazin Ludlow, Thomas Coffey, West Springfield, Stephen James Connor, Lennox, Henry Hank Morris, Pittsfield, John Pajak, Ware, Alfred J. Picard, Chicopee, Charles Chuck Roberts, Williamstown, Donald Roberts, Springfield, and Edward Wizick from Ware. So it was it's really a remarkable event. And, you know, there's a very much a focus on Memorial Day, and this is a big event that really kicks us off for us. At the State House in the Commonwealth. So it was a great, great day.
Great. And thanks for mentioning that. Absolutely. And sometimes here in Western Mass and Berkshire County and Pittsfield, especially, we get a bit disconnected from what happens at the State House and in the eastern part of the state. We've mentioned many times on this show, we're more likely to get New York and Albany news here than we are to get Boston news. So it's good to hear about things like that that are happening, and people should be connected to it. So thank you. Bill Sturgeon, who is the regular host of our show for many, many years here on Morning Drive, met you when you came here to Berkshire County and was able to make this connection so that you could join us here for the program this morning. And so appreciative to Bill for that. He has a question specifically about some benefits, veterans benefits that Massachusetts offers, such as tax exemptions, veterans preference for state employment, and tuition waivers for state colleges and universities. So where do those benefits fall, and maybe can you expand on that list of the things that might be available to our state veterans?
Sure. So I don't have all the answers for each of those. You know, one area I'll take on, and then I can follow up on those. I mean, the first and most important thing is reaching out to your VSO, and they can work through each of those benefits, and or going to our website, again, mass.gov/vets. And working with our counselors as an alternative to your VSO. Mm-hmm. The last one, just to talk about, is you know, community college in Massachusetts is free and available for individuals, and I think that's a really important advantage. Again, unfair advantage that we have in the Commonwealth that veterans can certainly take advantage of.
Right.
And of course, leveraging the tuition benefits that they have, GI Bill, and others. Are really important. So again, reach out to the VSO and they can work with you on those various opportunities.
Great. And I wanted to circle back to a couple things you mentioned in the first part of our interview, some of the programs that the office works through. You had mentioned the SAVE program, which I'm seeing is the Statewide Advocacy for Veterans Empowerment. Maybe expand on that a bit.
Yeah, so the SAVE team, they're sort of the utility player for us, is somewhat like a VSO in the sense that what they have training in doing is, you know, meeting with those veterans, really building a rapport, trust, and peer-to-peer counseling to help understand their needs, and then helping triage them to those various sources. So, again, whether it's housing, food insecurity. Mental health counseling or other services that are available. That's their main focus.
Okay. And then the other program you mentioned was SERVE, I believe, and I'm reading here, it's Supporting and Empowering Reintegration for Veterans Equality. I love the fact that we have a lot of acronyms, because I feel like that's also a very military thing, right?
Sure.
A very armed forces thing. Everything has to have an acronym.
Sure, of course. We've got everywhere. You need a real-time translator for any conversation.
Right. So give us a little bit more background on that, on the SERVE program.
Yeah, the SERVE program is, again, is something really phenomenal. The counselors that we have in the SERVE program are individuals with lived experience. So they have been involved in the court system, either in prison, they've navigated challenges of substance abuse or use, they meet with individuals, they help them through, if individuals are involved in the court system, if they're navigating substance abuse, and they work with them. And it's really, it's something special to meet with them, to understand their work, to see how embedded and invested they are and how meaningful it is to them. So it's a great program.
Great. You had mentioned the HEROES program, Housing, Equity, Resilience, and Outreach Services. These are efforts that it sounds like some of these programs are fairly recent to the office, and the office itself is fairly a recent innovation for the state, let's say. So talk about the HEROES program.
Sure. Their focus is really around safe and stable housing for veterans. And that really is all about partnership, with these nonprofits, with local housing authorities and others to either build and or maintain or build upon existing housing opportunities. And there's really sort of two general buckets. There's short-term and long-term housing. Mm-hmm. And in combination of those two, in the last couple of years, we've been able to house over 1,200 veterans in these different forms. Mm-hmm. So it's tough work. It takes quite a long time. We just announced a longstanding collaboration with Lynn, but sort of the next phase of actually building those units in the Lynn Armory. Mm-hmm. And we had an event a couple of weeks ago with Secretary Matias, who leads our housing efforts here at the state, and really, really interesting and meaningful work.
And working with the different state departments, and also I would imagine the federal VA must also be something that your office has to navigate, right? That there's those partnerships, those places where there's some overlap between, let's say, housing and veteran services, as you mentioned, or food insecurity or things like that. There are probably areas where you can work together. And I would imagine the connection, not directly connected with the VA, but there are things that the VA is providing that the state also needs to either complement or work in harmony with, right? How does that interaction work with your office?
It's great. Great question, because there's always some confusion, right, about the differences. And I think I've outlined our state level services, and the federal VA, the biggest program they have is healthcare. Mm-hmm. Multiple hospitals in Massachusetts and in Providence, their hospital or their healthcare system covers Southeast and the Cape is the Providence VA system. I've met, during the first 90 days with leaders from each of those institutions in Western Mass, along with the rest of the state. And the difference here is that the VA runs each of those hospitals, and our role really is to be a liaison and advocate for individuals, veterans within the Commonwealth. So our constituent services team really is our team that helps individuals if they have challenges, questions, concerns about access, about care and availability, reaching out to our constituent services team. And they can help you navigate work with the VA teams, the federal VA teams that are here throughout the state.
I would imagine that's quite a challenge also, navigating that network. And I know how important it is for veterans in Berkshire County to have the VA hospital over in Leeds near Northampton. That's the closest one here for us. But just the fact that the services are available, and funding, I would imagine, is always a challenge also. How is the funding for the state side, for the your Executive Office of Veteran Services? Is that support coming the way it should? Are we supporting it as well as we can?
Absolutely. it's pretty amazing. I got a call from, spoke with yesterday, actually, at the Military Appreciation Day, with Senator Rush, Navy veteran. Mm-hmm. His feedback is, what do you need, right? These are the questions. The governor is, what do you need? And really encouraging us to, again, sort of my first 90 days to ask questions, right? Why are we doing this? What's the process? How can we make it better? That's the overarching goal here. How do we improve and build on the great work over the last 2.5-3 years, establishing the Secretariat, going from startup to moving to a high reliability organization? And so, funding wise, I think we're right where we need to be. Obviously, right now, the Senate and House are going through their process of budget review now, and we'll wait to hear on the final determination there. But I think for what we've asked, we've certainly gotten what we've needed to keep moving forward, keep innovating, and keep improving.
Yeah, I think even in a tough budget year like we're facing this year, and I'm hearing that from all angles, there are certain core things that you just don't scrimp on, right? That you need to take care of your veterans. You need to take care of the people that have served the country, and you can't let them go. And so we find the same argument with our schools and education. We've had conversations on this program about that, and when you get a tight budget year, all things come into play. But it's good to hear that the support is definitely there. Dr. Eric Gorelnick is my guest. If you're just joining us here on the program, he is the Secretary of the Executive Office of Veteran Services for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, joining us this morning by Zoom on the show. And maybe you could talk, Secretary Gorelnick, about the challenges that you see coming forward, because we talked about some of the things in the past and the veterans' homes, soldiers' homes, and the challenges of COVID and the things that led to the creation of the office certainly in the past. But you're looking forward now. In the next 2 to 4 years, what do you see as the biggest challenges? And then maybe tell me about some opportunities that you see also.
Yeah, I mean, I think one challenge that you identified earlier is this chasm between sort of Vietnam veteran age veterans and current veterans, and think about the next generation of veterans, right? How do we bridge those gaps? How do we build connectivity, and how do we think about new models of engagement and support for veterans? So that's certainly one piece. Mm-hmm. It's very clear that my priority as a secretary, governor's priority, and the legislature's priority is those homes and making sure they continue to evolve. Again, move from startup to high reliability organizations. What that means in healthcare is continually improving your safety and quality. Things will always happen in healthcare facilities. They're complex organizations. There's many people, many roles and responsibilities, and continuing that commitment and culture of safety and psychological safety, where identifying events and learning from them and building to improve care for residents. So that's critically important. Mm-hmm. I think the third piece to focus on here is really what we touched on earlier again, is that military to civilian transition. Mm-hmm. When you're in the military, you get a disproportionate amount of leadership opportunities at a young age. You learn to navigate complexity. Learn to work across, again, sort of different ethnicities, races, sexes, with complex challenges. And all of those skill sets can serve us in the public, in the civilian sector, greatly. And many veterans struggle with that transition from the military to the civilian world. It's a different culture. It's a different language. We spoke about the acronyms. That's just the beginning, yeah. Right? And all the terminology. And so how do we adapt and support those individuals and help them make a soft landing into meaningful careers? There's two clearinghouses in the country that focus on this work. One is at Syracuse. One is at Penn State. They've done a fair amount of studies of veterans and transition and really have highlighted those skills. And I've identified many veterans want to continue service in some form or fashion, right? They look for service-oriented careers. And so I think that's something that, we have a program here in Massachusetts. Our team does offer some pathways to education, pathway to careers, but really building on that program, learning what we've done the last few years and scaling that is critically important. And it's a thing that we're looking to do in partnership with the public sector and partnership with the private sector to really recruit and retain the top talent here in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the transition and how things may translate and may not translate to civilian life. But there are so many strengths, as you mentioned, that come with military service. And when you're coming out, it's almost like fitting those in, right? And saying, okay, what is it you did at an early age? You were able to make these decisions. You connected with people. I mean, all of those things are great for, almost every new job that you might take on in civilian life. So I would imagine that's more of a strength than a liability.
Oh, 100%. And that's where we've got to flip the conversation, which is really how do we leverage these strengths to really help that veteran transition to civilian society? How do we help that organization that they're going to go work for, right, advance their mission? There are many organizations out there that provide some level of coaching for veterans in varying degree on this. I think, one of the key pieces is we can't wait till they're about to leave or after they've left. Right. How do we move, in the military world, we say left of boom, right? How do you move left a year prior or so before they're leaving? Because they're going to identify about a year out that they're going to separate.
Okay.
How do we make that, start that initial discussion? How do we understand, Sean, what do you want to do? What are your interests? You've been a military police officer. Mm-hmm. Is that something you want to pursue? Do you want to pursue law enforcement, or are there other careers? Have you thought about healthcare? Have you not thought about the, financial or the tech industry?
Right.
Let's help you on a flight path to success.
Did you feel like you got some of that support and transitional sort of information at the time that you were transitioning out of the military? And obviously you landed pretty well because you found, medicine as the sort of the source of your interest afterward and became very successful. So were you properly prepared at your time? Or can there be improvements?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. Yeah. I think, I benefited my whole life. I've benefited from people that have been gracious mentors. I'm really the product of so many that have helped me along the way. And so it's such an important thing for me to, pay it forward. Mm-hmm. That goes to the core of who I am. And I think, I found people along the way. I showed up, decided I was interested in medicine. I showed up in the emergency department at Balboa Naval Medical Center, and Lieutenant Commander Disney was the emergency physician, and he let me shadow him for a bunch of shifts. And that was the birth of, okay, how do I do this? What are the next steps in reaching out to people? Mm.
Sometimes it's that mentorship that makes a difference.
Oh, 100%. And it's an investment on both sides with the mentor and mentee. Yeah. The flip side of that is when I did, when I did start medical school when I was about 30 or so, it was different, right? It was challenging to go back to school full time, be surrounded by peers that were a bit younger, and work through that. And there was a real cultural shift for me. But again, benefiting from those peers, those individuals that helped educate me, going through med school, it was great. So that was an example. And all along the way, residency, working at Mass General Brigham and others, again, benefiting from that, team of individuals around you to help lift you up. It's been great.
Dr. Eric Gorelnik, Secretary of the Executive Office of Veteran Services here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We're reaching the end of our program here this morning. Any special message in the last 15 seconds or so for our Memorial Day?
It's a really important time for us to all pause and reflect upon the sacrifice that so many have given to preserve our freedom here in the Commonwealth and the United States. And just the ask is just take a moment and take a moment of pause and think about them, for them and their families. Thank
Absolutely.
You,
all right. Thank you, Secretary Gorelnik. We appreciate you being here. And everybody have a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend. And Morning Drive will return again on Tuesday morning, this program being broadcast on Monday. Take care, everybody.
Just get in my car.